picture in the EFU zone and give people a greater option. One thing that I don't think has been pointed out either is that by shifting land that is now zoned EFU to marginal, we take away the tax in the tax provisions that are more generous in the EFU zone than they are in the unzoned land. So you probably have increased the revenue that the county will bring in their areas that are zoned marginal. They now have to meet the income tests that are in unzoned land rather than the EFU tests.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Traeger, I'm sure he misspoke himself, but it doesn't really increase the revenue, it just shifts the load. The same amount of dollars are going to be affected in either case.
Well, you'll have individuals paying more dollars because if they do not meet that, they'll be paying on the full, rather than farm use assessment, they'll be paying. So
that's true, but others will be paying less. The same amount of money will come into the county.
Right. You're being very technical, and I appreciate that. Okay, more. I think that the other big advantage is simply that we are getting a more precise measure for the farm and the non-farm homes that go into a farm zone, and this will certainly have some benefits and from preventing litigation and make it easier to administer. Now, the last thing I'm going to leave you with is simply the idea that we need a lot more land, particularly in Western Oregon, for non-farm, for the part-time farmer. I want to point out that we already have taken exceptions on 200,000 acres in Western Oregon, in exceptions areas, and about 800,000 acres statewide that is in rural residential, which allows people to go into. So we've got a lot of land out there. But the one that most people don't realize, we also have throughout Western Oregon, and I'm not as clear on what happens in Eastern Oregon, we have a lot of farm forest areas. Farm forest 20s, farm forest 10. These are being used as small type farms, small parcel type farms. The LCDC hasn't really come up with the last word on those, but it appears that they're going to allow a lot of those to go in, and they justify them under the forestry goal on the basis that if you actually would take that land and forest it, you would be doing the state enough value and you would be enhancing the forestry goal so that if you have a 20-acre parcel and you forest 19 of it, you're allowed to build your house on 1 acre. So we have a tremendous lot more besides the rural residential that already allows for small parcelization in Western Oregon particularly. And then, of course, if we add marginal lands, we've added significantly more to that particular test. So I leave you with that, and if there are any further questions, I'd be glad to. Yes.
Hector, did you address or talk about the inheritance problem, whether you can reduce the size of a farm operation down to minimums for a purpose of inheritance?
I'm not sure that I understand the question. Would you give it to me again, and I'll listen more closely?
I'll try to give an example, and I don't know your family situation, but if you might have four children, under current law, only one of those children are really going to inherit that ranch. And some of us think that, maybe if you have 1,000 acres, you ought to be able to divide that up into for 250 acres. Now, I realize that only happens for one generation, but at least you ought to be able to get down to the minimums that are still economic units for inheritance purposes. I don't think that's possible under current law.
I won't argue that with you. I think it probably is possible. Now, it would be a subdivision if it's three or more. If you're going to cut a farm in two, each half of that farm would have to stand on its own merits as a farm unit. But I don't think there's any objection to cutting it up, and certainly nothing that's in this bill that would prevent you from even building a new home on half of that farm or a third of it for the farm, provided that's going to be a genuine farm operation. Now, if it's to be only one's to inherit and he's to be the farmer, of course the logical answer is to say, well, simply incorporate and you have one man that's actually the farmer, and but all of them may own it. And it would receive, as I understand, all the tax benefits that you'd get otherwise.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parkinson.
Hector, I assume you don't play golf. But golf courses, it almost looks to me like it would be a way to bank land for the future. And my question is, what damage do they do to farmland?
Well,
other than the clubhouse, I can see where there would be a building.
if you assume that those golf courses would disappear at some point when we might need the land more desperately than we need today, you might have a point. What actually happens, though, I think that if you look at the history of all kinds of development, it very rarely goes the other way. Now, I have yet to know of a golf course that's ever been plowed up and put back into farm production.
Simpletons did.
Obviously, golf courses pay off a heck of a lot better than farming, and it's not likely to go that way. It's a one-way street as far as anything that I'm aware of. Actually, my complaint is that golf courses are going in the wrong place. They're going on the best farmland. And if you want to consider golf courses, my advice would simply, let's don't ban golf courses. Let's simply say, let's don't put them on class 1, 2, or 3 soil. Then they can go onto the hill soils, and it may cost a little bit more to put them in. Obviously, they're going to have to go into a fairly rural area to get that kind of a land to put together. I would like to see golf courses go within urban growth boundaries where the amenities that golf courses provide add value to the surrounding land. When you put them out into Sauvies Island where you don't want houses to go around them, you put an attraction out there which makes people want to even more break down the zoning of the area and put homes in. And the same is true of the OSU golf course. It's on the very best class of land. And it's surrounded by EFU land that is not permitted to be cut up. If you look at the value of the homes around Eastmoreland Golf Course or something like that, you'll see what I'm talking about, how it enhances the residential areas that may be nearby.
Do you play golf?
No, I don't play golf.
Of course you did. Thank you very much. I enjoyed your testimony very much.
I leave you with just my last thought simply is that I hope that you can work the same magic with this particular bill that you did with 2295, because it was, I thought you were geniuses to put that together with this little controversy as you did.
Mr. Chairman, thank you
very much.
Thank you.
I used to play a lot of golf, and I think what Hector says would be very good. It sounds like a much more interesting golf course.
Thank you, Hector. A. Grunge, are you visiting or? Fine. We are due on the floor at 3:30. We have several people to be heard. I think I'll take those from out of town first. Alan Bachman of Washington County from Beaver.
Thank you. I'm Alan Bachman, Washington County Council's office, and our Board of County Commissioners was concerned that we be involved with the legislative process to assure that what came out of the legislature benefited both our county and the state. And we're sort of a strange interest group, sort of like, I guess, the legislature is an interest group, because we represent many different facets of the county. We represent farmers, foresters, people with rural residential uses, people in the urban area, and whatnot. So it's our job to balance all those interests and come up with a plan that will benefit as many as possible. And in going through your latest version of 237, I've prepared a letter with our comments, and I'm not going to go through the whole letter in the interest of time, but I will submit that to you. Sometimes legislation looks really good on paper and good in concept, but when you actually go out to apply it, unfortunately, you cannot benefit from it. And a good example of that, I guess, would be the 1981 lot of record bill. I don't believe there was one lot in Washington County that qualified under that bill. And the way 237 is right now, that could very possibly end up being the case in Washington County without some changes. First of all, I'll hit on some of the major areas of concern. On the gross income test, which is on page 2 of your 237A7, you have to not make a significant contribution to a farm operation that produced $20,000 or more in gross income. Okay, our problem is, and very often we have to zone lands in what we call a legislative process, where you look at a large area. You decide who fits into what zone. And what is the basis that we're going to use for determining that $20,000 in gross income? Are we going to go by rumors in the area? Are we going to ask people for their tax statements and have them tell us, of course, where to go by trying to figure out how much they made that way. That could create some real problems. So what we're looking for is some objective way in the legislative process you can determine what land is marginal land and what land is not marginal land. And this would hopefully cut down on litigation over what conclusions local government makes. I've submitted a proposal on page 2 of my letter for amendment to that provision, and I'm not particularly married to this language, but I would hope that you'd at least consider the concept. Every year, as I understand it, is required by law to file an annual report on the farm data in the county. And in the annual report, which comes from the University of Oregon Extension Service, it indicates the amount of gross income for the various types of crops and agricultural activities in the county. And what we would like is for a county to at least be given the option to use this data as the basis for determining the gross income on the lands, irrespective of what the people actually make there. So if somebody has 10 acres of strawberries, you can use this data for 10 acres of strawberries that's prepared by the county to determine what the gross income would be, rather than having to ask the person, how much money did you make? And as I stated previously, you really can't ask everybody in the legislative process how much money they made, nor do I think we can probably by law, you know, require them to give us that kind of information in a legislative process. So I would hope that you consider something along those lines.
I'm just trying with, like, in my county, in Curry County, my property is unzoned farmland or something.
Okay.
And the legislature has seen fit to require an income test to qualify for the farm use assessment. And I have to submit regularly my income data.
That's correct.
I don't mind that because I am getting something of benefit back. So I don't mind doing that. And I guess I would wonder whether people who are trying to get something put into marginal land, which has some benefit to them, would also, why would they mind having to, I don't understand. I submit my income data for farm use assessment. Why would they mind submitting income data for land designation?
May I respond to that? There are several problems with that. In your particular case, that would be more like a quasi-judicial type determination. You're not involved in a legislative process. You individually are applying for that special tax benefit. You don't have to go out in a 100-acre area and get everybody together to find out how much money they made in order to qualify for your special farm deferral system. You just have to qualify for it yourself.
That's correct.
Under this test here, you have to have at least 100 acres together to meet the gross income requirements. And somebody next to you could say, I don't want this guy to build a house, so well, I make more than $20,000 a year.
Mr. Chairman, that's not quite how I read the bill. Now, it's new to me, so you may have been living with it longer than I have, but my understanding was that one of the tests, the first test, was whether the land, not any 100 acres of land, but the land in question, made a significant contribution to the farm or not in the $20,000 figure. And then, if it did meet that income test, then it was either parcelized or low-class soil. I mean, then the 100 acres comes in after that test. The 100 acres doesn't apply to the income test.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but it was my understanding that in the 100-acre area, in the marginal land area, all the properties had to meet the income test. You couldn't be next to a farm that was grossing $1 million a year and include that in your 100-acre marginal land area. So you have to know how much your neighbor is making in gross income, which can give reason in a hearing process with many feuds and whatnot for people to just plainly lie, either one way or the other. Maybe they want their neighbor to build, and so they come there and say, I didn't make anything last year in gross income. And what I'm saying is, counties, especially given the funding situation today, need a fast, efficient system of resolving land use disputes. And we would hope that you'd go to something more objective, like in the annual reports, that type of data, that will allow that type of thing to occur, and at least give that consideration. And maybe there's another idea as well, but that's what we want. We're not trying to say we want certain people to meet the marginal land definition or certain people not to. but we're asking for at least a clear basis for understanding who is who.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, that's one concern that we have. Another concern that we have that was brought up previously is regarding the lot of record language, and it was brought up about the family memberships. We have a concern there where if several members of the same family come to our planning department counter and say, I want a building permit, who do we give the building permit to? There's no process mentioned in the statutes. Well, I've heard a response that, well, you don't have to worry about it because it's the same language as in the lot of record bill of 1981. Well, I don't think there's been a problem there because I guess there's only been about 8 lots statewide that qualified for that bill. If you intend to qualify a lot of lots for the marginal land bill, sooner or later, and I'm sure it's going to happen, there's going to be a couple that's going to get divorced or some family members that aren't getting along or whatnot where they're going to be battling over who gets that building permit. And once again, the county is going to be in that position to have to come up with the right answer, and probably no matter which answer it came up with, it will face litigation from the other party. And we would hope that you consider something in the bill that resolves that type of issue of who in that type of situation gets the building permit. As a matter of fact, you might consider even dropping it, because in order to qualify for marginal land, you're going to look at an entire farm operation and how much it makes. And if you have 3 lots owned by family members, you're going to look at that entire farm operation from the family. And if they're not making that gross income figure, why should not they not be entitled to get building permits for their lots? So leave that for your consideration. Other points is regarding the time frame for the lot for a lot to get a building permit in the marginal land area. The lot has to be lawfully created or transferred within the time frame indicated. I guess it's January 1st, 1948 to January 1st, 1978. I guess that means if somebody's legitimately buys a lot today and he's a farmer, he cannot even get a farm-related building permit if he's put in the marginal land area for some reason. Nor does it provide for building permits in the future.
Mr. Chairman?
I just see some real problems coming up.
Where are you in the bill?
Okay. I have to apologize. My last version that I had till today was 237-6. Now you got -7. So I'm at 4, lines 4 through 5.
Thank you.
Okay. So what if somebody wants to buy a lot today in the marginal land area? That's my problem. As well as, what if you want to create a farm-related dwelling on marginal land? I don't know how you deal with that. As well as the issue of, I'm trying to bring up that there's a number of issues that need to be resolved. I'm sure you're getting that message. As well as, what do you do about rezonings later? Can one person be rezoned out of marginal land without disqualifying that area? Or does he have to pull in everybody to be rezoned if he wants to be, let's say, in an exclusive farm use zone? I don't know. There's provisions for farm or forest-related dwellings. And once again, we have an income test requirement on lots smaller than the minimum lot size of $2,500 in annual gross income. And I understood Mr. McPherson indicate that there is some data available for that. If there's particular data that's going to be relied upon for that figure, I suggest that somehow that be referenced in the legislation so that we don't have different counties relying on different things if there's a set standard. There's provisions allowing non-farm dwellings in the exclusive farm use zone. And what's being considered there is that in all cases, it cannot cause a major change or measurable increase in the cost of accepted farming practices on nearby land. Well, especially in the case of Washington County, you don't have just farm after farm after farm. Sometimes you have other resource uses, such as forestry, other types of operations. We think that if you're going to consider the impact of the dwelling, you should consider that impact equally on all resource uses in the area, not just consider farming on that particular proposal. My last point I'd like to make is there's a non-farm dwelling that's allowed pretty easily on 2 acres. Apparently, the people who thought up of this one figured that if you have 2 acres, we're not going to make him have to sell it to the farmer next door to him. We'll let him build the house on 2 acres. Okay, and they're also assuming that 2 acres isn't going to be a viable farm unit. Okay, well, what about the person with 3 acres, 4 acres, 5 acres? Is that person going to be forced to have to sell to the farmer next to him? Or does he have a viable farm operation that he can get a building permit for in conjunction with farm use? I have a feeling there's a lot of people who think that person's going to be trapped in the middle. They're not going to be able to make the farm-related dwelling test, and they won't meet this 2-acre non-farm test. So those people are going to have to be forced to sell to their neighbors when the 2-acre parcel doesn't have to do that. And I can see that creating some real inequities. Basically, I would hope you take a look at my letter, the concerns, and try to achieve a bill that is actually workable on the land in application. And I wish we had been involved in it a lot earlier than we had. Unfortunately, as you find out, is the people out there that actually have to apply these laws are the people that right now are under great burdens due to economic restraints in local government and in trying to provide services, and don't really have the time to do that and spend time at the legislature as well. It's unfortunate.
Chairman?
How did the Senate respond when you brought these issues to them?
Well, that's what I was getting at is, as I understand, of course, our senator that we've been primarily involved with has been Senator Hamby. And I understand that she voted to move this out of committee, but expressed concerns.
So you didn't even participate in the construction of this measure when it was in the Senate?
We didn't participate till the very end. Quite frankly, and especially in the case of our office, we're down right now to almost half staff level. And we had a lot of things going on with the county involved with potential layoffs and whatnot that involved quite a bit of workload. So we've just been able to get some breathing room, a little bit, and got involved. I don't know if that's a very good excuse, but that's the reason.
Well, and I guess on the other side of the question, we're trying to adjourn this legislature by June 30, and probably would have been most constructive if you could have had the opportunity to present these to the body that was really building this particular vehicle and draft and bill and concept. We had been trying to operate under the assumption that the Senate would take the lead on this bill while we took the lead on the rewrite of LCDC. I frankly am surprised that you didn't present your concerns in the Senate. I think that would have been most appropriate.
Yes. Representative Van Loon?
Just one question. The counties haven't been totally unrepresented here. I don't know whether you worked with the Association of Oregon Counties or whether you're operating on your own, but they have been here.
No, I understand that. And we're actually pretty much a unique case in Washington County, I must say. But we do share some things.
You are unique in your land
yes.
use.
We do share some concerns with other counties. And I think AOC does a very good job on behalf of counties. But once again, they aren't actually in there working in the county either. And sometimes it helps if we can come out of the woodwork too a little bit. And I apologize for the lateness involved in it, but I don't think that should be an excuse for adopting legislation that won't do the job that you want it to do. You might be better off not doing it. And I'm just letting you know that please take a good look at it. And if you want to adopt it, if you like the concepts, make sure that it achieves those ends in actual practice. What we don't want is to hold out to the people that we have something like the 1981 lot of record bill, wave it in front of their faces, and then put them in an exclusive farm use zone and say, sorry, even though it looks like you got marginal land here, we cannot come up with the findings of fact to determine that you qualify. Because we can't administer.
Mr. Chairman, one continuation on that lot of record bill. By the time it came out of the Senate, it was considerably different from the form that it left this committee in, too.
Mr. Chairman.
What is your recommendation about the 2 acres non-farm dwelling in a exclusive farm use? You didn't say. You said you pointed out the contradiction. What do you want to know?
Well, I think you can make a case that in many cases 5 acres is not going to qualify in the state for a farm-related dwelling. Okay, so then you got to answer the policy issue of, do you want that 5 acres to have to be sold to the person next door? Or should that person who's had that 5 acres be able to build a house on it, like the 2-acre person? And so maybe 5 acres might be a more appropriate cutoff than the 2.
So the contradiction comes over 5 acres. Is you just want to move from 2 to 5, not eliminate the whole idea, the whole non-farm dwelling and a farm use?
That's right, because I think the concept in there is that if the person has 2 acres, we feel that in certain instances statewide, we've had laws which allowed a person to create that 2-acre parcel. And now should we make that person now have to sell their parcel for maybe next to nothing since they have no choice? Or should we allow them to be able to use the land for the purpose they bought it for? And what I'm saying is if a person has 5 acres, he's probably going to end up being in the same boat as the 2-acre parcel was today. And so maybe you should treat them both equally or find a... Maybe there's a better cutoff than 5, I don't know. But it may be more appropriate than 2.
Thank you.
Other questions? Alan, will you be able to be attending some more of our sessions? So you're probably going to have 3 or 4 more meetings.
Yes, I do hope to. Thank you very much.
Mrs. Clackamas, you're taking an order. Who does she represent? Mrs. Clackamas. Artists Stevenson, Clackamas County, and Oregon American Planning Association.
I'm Artis Stevenson. I'm the Assistant Director of Clackamas County's Department of Environmental Services. I appreciate the fact that Mr. McPherson pointed out that the benefit of this kind of marginal lands approach is to quiet some of the controversy. And I certainly agree there has been a great deal of controversy about what land is appropriate for farming and what is not. I personally had the opportunity, if that's what it was, to talk to something like 1,800 people in a 5-week period at the meetings we had in Clackamas County to try to explain what exclusive farm use zoning was, what non-farm uses were, what exceptions procedures were. From the county's point of view, and I think I can speak also on behalf of the American Planning Association, of which I'm the secretary, and which we discussed this bill in its previous form 2 weeks ago, I don't think this bill is of any help to the counties, who are presumably the ones who have to accept all that conflict and deal with it over their counters. I guess my preference would be that we had no bill at all. If there isn't an effort by the legislature to try to deal with some of those circumstances which are not appropriate for agricultural use, and we want to do something to allow some kind of escape valve for those people, I hope we can do something with this legislation that will make it more workable, more easily administered, and not so costly both to the public and to the private property owners. What we have here, I think, is a effort to lend flexibility and quiet controversy, which is really probably a pick and a poke. We have a tightening up on the exclusive farm use legislation, contradictory to the plan which Clackamas County has already had acknowledged. We have an opportunity, if we chose, to use the marginal lands provisions in a way that I'm not sure we could ever possibly administer. The Association of Oregon Counties is going to present a position to you when it's their hometown opportunity to speak this afternoon, and we very much support the kinds of suggestions that AOC is going to make to you. It seems to me that when we talk about establishing a 20-acre minimum lot size in a marginal lands category, the people I run into are going to say, how come when we've already got a 20-acre exclusive farm use zone? What's the difference? Why is marginal land requiring the same minimum lot size as a EFU zone would? 10 acres would be a much more realistic kind of lot size if we're talking about those areas which are not the best for farm use. Since there's already been conversation about the lot of record bill, it seems to me that if we are going to let people use land that they have been paying taxes on for a long time, we ought to look at the land itself and not the ownership. I don't know why we would want to tie the lot of record provision to who owned it 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Most land use ordinances go with the land, not with the people, and I think we could achieve the same kind of results by not trying to figure out who was the owner at some particular time and not preclude all future sales of that kind of property. The income standard is going to be a tough thing for the county to administer. Perhaps the suggestion from Washington County would work, where we can have some kind of standard that doesn't require asking someone what their income was and what their neighbor's was and so forth. We are not going to be able to do this legislatively. The county is working, the planners that are left working in Clackamas County, half what there were 2 years ago, now work 4 days a week, have a 20% pay cut, and are barely keeping up with the subdivisions in the urban area, the planned unit developments, the commercial and industrial uses. So whatever happens with a marginal land proposal, were we to utilize that provision, would be the obligation of the property owner to come in and say, I want to be classified this way, and for him to fulfill those kinds of requirements that the legislation might require. If this bill is to help counties and local people who are frustrated with the confusion over the EFU statutes, don't do it for me or for Clackamas County. We don't need it.